The Paddy Power Half Hour on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power, the greatest football partnership since Shearer and Owen.
You're very welcome to this week's edition of the Paddy Power Half Hour. The international break is over, perhaps not one to remember from an Irish perspective, but the Premier League is back with some huge clashes this weekend, none bigger than the meeting of rivals Liverpool and Manchester United at Old Trafford this coming Sunday. Liverpool hoping to win 18 consecutive league games, albeit it stretches across a couple of seasons, while Manchester United come into this game on the back of their worst start to a season for almost three decades. Joining me today to take a look forward to all these games is Phil Egan and Endicott. Good afternoon to you, gentlemen.
Will, how are you
getting on?
Don't forget, we will be discussing odds throughout the programme here on the Paddy Power Half Hour as well. So for information on responsible gambling, go to dunlewy.net. And our football coverage here on Off the Ball is with thanks to Paddy Power. You can listen in on offtheball.com. You can also listen on the Go Loud app currently. And we're on our social channels on YouTube, Facebook and Twitter on Off the Ball as well. Lads, we're going to talk about the Premier League coming back this weekend, but we probably have to start with Ireland, unfortunately.
Do we?
Well, I suppose we kind of have to, because we previewed
Bring
it last
the mood
weekend.
Down straight away, that's...
Well, look, we were right in terms of the Georgia game that we thought it was going to be dour, Phil. We were kind of predicting there was probably going to be very few goals. We got none. The disappointment, though, was the follow-up maybe against Switzerland on Tuesday, where a lot was on the line. A win would have sent Ireland to Euro 2020, and we didn't get the performance that was required.
I'm not actually that disappointed with the Switzerland game, because I never expected us to win. And, you know, even though the line into the game was Ireland can qualify for Euro 2020 tonight in Geneva, they were never going to win that game. Now, the disappointment for me was in Georgia, and I expected it to be fairly dour, but I also expected to see Aaron Connolly at least 10 minutes earlier. Mm-hmm. And when he came on, he created a couple of chances. And I just didn't like the fallout from it that we were being told it was a good point. Sure, Denmark drew here. Denmark did draw there, but...
That seems a slip-up, though.
When Denmark drew there... You know, we were all going, oh, that's a great result. But then it dawned on us that we have to go to Tbilisi, and it's never easy for us, and that's the way it proved to be. But Denmark at least bounced back by beating Switzerland in Copenhagen last Saturday. Our next performance was a 2-0 defeat, which the first half in particular was shambolic. There was changes of formation. There was lads that couldn't pass a ball. Now we're being told... Oh, you know, we're playing Denmark on the 18th of November at the Aviva. If you had given me that at the start of the group, okay, that's fair enough. You still have to go and beat Denmark. Are we capable? Perhaps. Will we beat them? Unlikely. Mm-hmm. And then we'll end up going into a playoff probably next March from the fallout from the Nations League. And effectively, I just feel like all we're doing is kicking the can down the road, and I'm not that confident we'll qualify for the Euros.
What do you reckon? And I mean, Mick McCarthy has a point in that we would have all taken a situation where Ireland would win one game of their last two to go to the Euros. In this case, now it's going to have to be a win against Denmark. But the style of football hasn't been very encouraging, and the last couple of games have been particularly disappointing.
Yeah, well, I think if you go back to the start of the campaign when Denmark and Switzerland drew, Switzerland were 3-0 up at the time, yes, and yeah. Denmark came back, and everyone thought this was a great result, but that... straight away said that we would have to beat either Denmark or Switzerland to go through. So we're in the same situation as we would have thought we were going to be from that very moment. But like Phil said, the Georgia game, once Denmark drew in Tbilisi, that opened up a window for us to pounce on that and give ourselves the best possible chance to get through. And we didn't do that in Georgia, and we were really passive in that game. And that's what's most disappointing about this is Mick McCarthy keeps saying it's a great point, and again, he keeps saying that if we were in this situation, he would have bit your hand off for that. He's going to say the same thing if we don't get through against Denmark. If we don't beat Denmark in Aviva, he'll say, if you had offered me a playoff position at the start of this campaign, I would have taken that, no problem. Of course he's going to take that, but we're not even guaranteed a spot if we don't beat Denmark, because we have some really difficult permutations going through that. Potentially a game against Northern Ireland, who... on form and on the way that they've been playing, would beat us hands down.
To get there, we'd have to beat Bosnia or Slovakia.
Exactly, and Bosnia are off two great results over the last weekend as well. So Bosnia are a better team than they were when we beat them for the last Euro qualifications when we went away, and then Jonathan Walters scored two goals at the Aviva to put us through. So we're in a really difficult position. Like Phil, I was really, really disappointed not to see Aaron Connolly earlier against Georgia, because if you look at the game, you're wondering, Well, how could he make it worse?
It's worth checking out Raf Diallo's article, by the way, if you haven't seen it, with the permutations for what could happen in the playoffs. Effectively, because of Ireland's Nations League position, and this is the hangover from playing very poorly in that and finishing bottom of our group, we'll be in the kind of very low seeds, unseeded effectively, which means that we're going to have to go away from home in both legs. And that makes it extremely difficult to qualify, Phil.
Yeah, because we just don't look like winning games. Even looking ahead at the Denmark game, it's hard to imagine they won't score. So we have to score two goals. How are we doing that? James Collins isn't the answer. McGoldrick should be back by then, and he will make a huge difference. But you just wouldn't have much hope in terms of even the midfield. And the fact that, okay, he dropped Conor Hourihan and he brought in Alan Brown, but the likes of Jeff Hendrick and James McLean haven't performed, but they keep getting picked. And what that says is, it's okay, lads, I'll keep picking you. Now, when are they going to repay the manager's faith that he has in them with a performance?
It also goes against what Mick McCarthy has been saying, is that he's going to pick players on their club form.
Yeah.
James McLean's playing for a Stoke side who are at the bottom of the championship.
At left back.
So why does he then merit to be an automatic starter for Ireland, especially when he's not playing well? And I don't want to single out McLean because he's not the only Irish player that's not performed to his ability, but McLean hasn't performed well in a couple of years.
Granted, he was a shocker in Georgia.
He was fine in the last qualification campaign, but in this qualification campaign, he's been terrible. And he was terrible against Georgia, and he continually gave out to different players around the pitch when he made a mistake. So I think he needs to come out of the team for this next game against Denmark. I don't think he will, though. I think Hendrick will start this next game. It's just whether he'll go with Alan Brown or Hourihan again. I can't see there being too many changes going into this game.
Even, like, I'm not saying Shane Long is the answer, but surely he's good enough to get in the squad. And he wasn't playing at the time, maybe last month, but when Mick McCarthy named the squad, he had played against Chelsea. But whatever about Shane Long's goal-scoring record, at least he gives you energy in attack and he unsettles the opposition defenders because he'll actually try and close them down. And it sets a tempo and it sets, you know, what can happen as well, the team can play a bit higher up and then you squeeze a team in and it goes back to the Jack Charlton mantra of put them under pressure. But teams, when they're put under pressure at the back, make mistakes. And that seems to be our best chance of scoring goals by forcing teams into mistakes or set pieces. We're not going to create patterns of play where we string seven or eight passes together and finish it off with a goal. That's just not happening. That is something that Stephen Kenny will probably look to bring in when he comes in. I'm even starting to wonder, if we don't beat Denmark, would it be worth bringing Stephen Kenny in if we're in a playoff in March and just get the ball rolling then?
End of call, big call. What would you do if you're in that situation with the FAI? Presumably, they have to stick with McCarthy, but would you be tempted to say, here, Stephen, here's the reins a few months earlier, get us through?
Yeah, you'd definitely be tempted. The only thing I would say against that is it would be slightly unfair in the under-21s, who he's doing pretty good work with, exceptional work with, I should say, rather than pretty good. I know the succession plan is to get him up to the senior squad eventually, but you just wonder, would that have an impact on the younger players who have came to enjoy life under Stephen Kenny at under-21s, the likes of, you know, Malumbi, Jason Malumbi, and these players, like the likes of Aaron Connolly, they're coming through the under-21s, and the reason they're getting out their opportunities is because Stephen Kenny is letting them express themselves and show their ability. So if you bring Stephen Kenny in too early, is he bringing those younger players with him for a playoff campaign? I don't think he is. So I would leave it for the next few years. Let Mick try to get it through the playoffs. If he fails, he fails. And Stephen Kenny comes in for a few friendlies before the Nations League next year. I don't think it's going to make that much of a difference, but I would be worried about the under-21s if you do take Stephen Kenny out too early.
And we're going to switch across to the Premier League in a moment, but do you fancy Ireland to qualify, whether it's by a win against Denmark or winning two playoffs?
See, Irish fans go through this little cycle, and I was saying it outside off air. 3 days off the game, you'll be like, nah, not a chance. There's no way. Where are the goals going to come from? 2 days before the game, you're thinking, you know, we might nick one. Shane Duffy might get off for a header from a set piece. And the day before, people are thinking, you know, I just have a feeling we're going to win. We're not going to get through the Denmark game anyway. And I would have my doubts about the playoff as well.
Pretty scary, Phil, that Shane Duffy to score from a header seems our most likely way to score.
Yeah, nearly did it in Georgia. Nearly like, and you know, he's so good in the air. When you look back at that chance, you almost expect him to score. But
he was disappointed himself. You can see.
That's where we're at now. It's not a good situation to be in. I'm almost kind of resigned to the fact that we won't be at the Euros next year. That I'll probably be going to the Aviva to watch teams. That it'll be a neutral day out for me. Mm. But that can be enjoyable.
Well, we could see Germany, France, or England play against each other in Aviva Stadium, and that's I'd better like a prospect than watching Ireland
Germany,
play
France
out a draw.
A great game. I'd go to that. I don't know who I'd support. I just support football.
You might get to see some good football. Look, I think despite the style of football, we still hope that Ireland can get to Euro 2020 next summer, but a huge game coming up against Denmark next month. Now, this weekend, I suppose the biggest game is coming up this Sunday. It's live and off the ball as well. We've got Manchester United against Liverpool at Old Trafford. Manchester United have got all manner of problems coming into this. They're bang out of form. Their worst start to a season in 30 years. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer getting the dreaded second vote of confidence this week from Ed Woodward as well. They've got injuries with Paul Pogba and David De Gea not available. So, Phil Egan, that means that Liverpool are going to lose, doesn't it?
Do you know what? Like, everyone keeps thinking, oh, this, like, we obviously do our predictions outside in the office and everyone's going for Liverpool and people. Like, I have gone for Liverpool myself, but I don't really see the point that people think Liverpool are going to score a bucket full of goals. I don't think it's going to happen. They've scored more than two once away from home this season. That was against Burnley. And sure, if they score an early goal against United, they could fill their boots. Maybe, I kind of was looking at Liverpool winning this game, maybe 2-1. But Klopp hasn't won at Old Trafford since he's taken over at Liverpool. They were far too cautious last season. If you look at the games...
It's large part of that, though, the way that Jose Mourinho set up to play against Liverpool over the last couple of seasons.
Absolutely, but if you look at Klopp's team selection last season, he went for Milner as a right-back. Firmino went off injured. He brought on Daniel Sturridge. There were two calls I think he got wrong. You can't legislate for Firmino to get injured, but you don't bring on Daniel Sturridge at Old Trafford when clearly running isn't part of his setup anymore. Like, Divock Origi was on the bench, Shaqiri was on the bench, but it brought on Sturridge. I think Liverpool have to be positive from the start. United are frail. They'll be up for the game. They'll want to stop Liverpool's winning run. The crowd will be up for it. There's very little expectation. There's no pressure on United. So Liverpool have to start well. And if they can score early, then United have to come out and try and find an equaliser, and that's where Liverpool can pick them apart. But watching Liverpool away from home, they've been wasteful. Ball doesn't stick up front, the last pass doesn't go to feet, and they've butchered a few chances. You know, I think back to the Sheffield United game, Mane missed a few chances. Eventually, they get a goal, which was gifted to them from Dean Henderson, and goal for Sheffield United. So I think Liverpool have to be positive. You have a fair idea what team they're going to pick. Do they try and play high up and basically leave it 2-on-2 and say to Van Dijk and Matip, we presume Matip will be back from injury, and say, right, you know, I trust you to be able to handle Marcus Rashford on a breakaway, but that would suit United.
Contrasting fortunes, and in terms of the injuries coming into this one, because Alisson has been back in training with Liverpool, and Matip has been back training as well, and then that news that broke on Tuesday evening that David De Gea has come back injured from Spain, which we saw that game against Sweden, he just felt his thigh the minute he kicked that ball, and Paul Pogba's ankle still hasn't healed up in time. On the face of it, how big a loss for United are De Gea and Pogba?
I don't think they're that big a loss, because I think going into the game, United were expecting not to have it, Pogba at least. It's a big boost that Martial's back for the game. David De Gea hasn't really been on form this year, and Romero is, out of all the substitute keepers in the Premier League, he's up there with the best, to be honest. So I wouldn't be too worried about filling De Gea's boots at the minute, because, you know, he is a great shot stopper, but he hasn't been on form this year, so he's not a big loss. Pogba, United have been dealing without him all year, so they're just going to have to keep doing what they're doing. I would even question whether he's properly injured or not. It's just a coincidence that he... It's a conspiracy theory, if nothing else, but it's just a coincidence that he bumps into the Real Madrid boss out in Dubai when he's out injured. So, you know, I don't know.
A fairly exclusive resort, though, that none of us could afford to stay in, but
rich people can.
Yeah, so. Yeah.
There's very little in that. There's nothing in that. In fact, I'm just making it up on
two
the
weeks,
spot.
2 weeks in all, we've seen Enda's hot take flash across the screen in front of me.
No, there's nothing in that. But
is your United worry maybe that Pogba downs tools when he's not feeling it? Because Paul Pogba, when Solskjaer was appointed, comes back to form. Obviously, he was very poor. Mourinho was singling him out for criticism at the end of his time.
He was left on the bench for Mourinho's last game, which is against Liverpool.
I think that's just his... I don't know if it's him down in tools, because there's no evidence to back that up. Like most of the reports that come out is that he's extremely hard working, but I would say he's just hot and cold. He blows hot and cold. He's inconsistent, like many players are, especially top players like that who rely on flair, rely on passing. But I mean, Pogba would be slowing the ball down too much anyway for the type of play that United are going to try play against Liverpool, which is the counter-attack. Pogba is continually taking too many touches before he lets the ball go. So.
But sometimes his touch is fabulous. Like, remember that pass he played for Rashford against Chelsea? That kind of little moment of quality in a big game.
He is by far and away United's best player, quality-wise. But he's just too inconsistent. And I'm not saying he wouldn't make a difference against Liverpool, because he obviously would when United's midfield is just invisible this year. But I don't think United have enough quality across the pitch for him to make that noticeable difference that they would need this weekend.
Phil, where are United going to score goals from? Because they're short of them all over the place. Rashford's not really scoring from open play. Martial might be back for this weekend, but he's coming off the back of an injury. Scott McTominay has been kind of their leading scorer outside of the strikers so far this season.
Scott McTominay is United's joint top scorer since the start of April with three goals.
He's not the defensive midfielder. He's not the guy you want to be relying on to get your goals.
In fairness, he gives you, like, he puts everything in terms of his work rate. And as United improve in the next few years, which you'd imagine surely has to happen because it can't get much worse, McTominay will probably grow into it. And he kind of strikes me as a player that with better players around them, he'll look even better as well. But I think their best bet, like, Liverpool will try and, if they do try and play a high line, is that ball then the channels to Rashford? Is that something that they can exploit behind, say, where Trent Alexander-Arnold will leave space in behind because he'll be encouraged to go forward? That might be an option. We saw Rashford actually played pretty well in Sofia for England the other night because he was playing in a functional team where, you know, when he gets the ball, he's got options, whether it's to go himself or to pass, where when he plays at United, at times he can be running, chasing, and very little reward for it.
Is it helped by the fact as well, Phil, that Rashford has other players in the England team to stretch the defence for him? Because, you know, Bulgaria obviously very afraid of the runs that Raheem Sterling was making. They didn't really know where to play their line, so it played right into Raheem Sterling's hands. While United this season can be seen to sit quite deep, and they leave Rashford, you know, quite exposed up front on his own.
Yeah, like their best bet, as I said, it's Rashford or Daniel James. Pace on the break, and Liverpool just being caught out, maybe, you know, a stray pass, and then they're a bit vulnerable for a breakaway. But saying that, you still have to be able to beat that high line, which is proving more difficult now this season because of VAR. So Liverpool are able to push up a little bit higher because they know that if it's tight, which you might get the rub of the green last season, but VAR is going to be a bit more definitive on what's offside and what's not. But maybe a chance from a set piece, Liverpool, like, you're looking at Harry Maguire to come up. Like, he missed an absolute sitter against Newcastle. But then if Liverpool have Van Dijk in their penalty area, is Maguire going to be able to get in and win a header? So it's hard to see. I just think United's best chance, obviously, is the longer it stays nil-all, the better.
Yeah.
If they can get to half-time at nil-all, they will be definitely in with a shot at not only drawing the game, but maybe nicking a winner, because Liverpool will start getting a bit edgy.
And United have to try and frustrate that front three of Liverpool particularly. And, you know, Mo Salah, obviously a fantastic player. Sometimes in the bigger games, though, he can get a little bit held up. Things can get a bit congested in front of him. What kind of game are you expecting from Mo Salah on Sunday?
I would say he's going to have a lot of fun, because United's defence down that left-hand side with Ashley Young playing at the minute is vulnerable, especially when he goes forward. He doesn't have the legs to get back. But also, he's being frustrated by the lack of support from his midfield as well. So, especially with Trent Alexander-Arnold doubling up with Mo Salah, I would expect them to have a lot of success down there, if you want to say. Alexander-Arnold is up there with the best right-backs in the world. He has I was just looking at the top stats for like the
he's in the Guinness World Record records after that.
The different players. I know stats don't mean that much.
Getting into the Guinness Book of Records
for one league.
Not for football things. Like, no, I want people to be in the Guinness Book of Records for how long they can hold their breath for underwater. What about that, like, kind of thing?
How many snakes are taking a bath with?
Yeah, or
juggling
like
football while standing on a shark.
How many cream crackers can you eat in a minute? That kind of thing.
Not assists.
No.
12 assists isn't good enough for you.
Across the two teams, he's in the top three of assists this year, and he's also in the top crosses as well. So he's going to be bombarding United with crosses, and it's going to be a real test for that defence this week. And down the left-hand side, where Ashley Young is vulnerable defensively, I think Liverpool are going to have a lot of pleasure.
Yeah, the only thing is with Salah, because he's so left-footed and he's playing out in the right, he likes to cut inside. That'll suit Ashley Young because he's right-footed.
Yeah, he turns right every time anyway.
Yeah, it would actually suit him. And it worked well a few seasons ago where Mourinho actually made a point in putting him there and he did quite well. And in terms of putting crosses in, they're going to have to be good crosses because Maguire will just... he'll win everything in the air unless you put them...
they're going to be low.
Low into the... are you talking...
low into...
the corridor of uncertainty.
That's it. bounce on the six-yard box, you know, across the goal. Danger.
Right, before we ask the lads for their predictions, we have What Odds Paddy and some of the kind of fun bets we've got for this weekend are all based around Manchester United and Liverpool. Lads, the first one is probably going to be reliant on what people see in the cameras in the stands, because Paul Pogba to have red dye in his hair for the United-Liverpool game is 20-1. And I'm assuming Paddy is paying out if the camera cuts to Paul Pogba and he's in the stand with red dye.
See, I think he'll be wearing a cap. I think he'll try go low profile. Like,
he won't be taking selfies for his Instagram this time.
I don't think so.
No.
No.
Posting them.
But there'll definitely be a shot of him. Yeah. Will he have the crutches, do you think?
I don't know. He's off them now, isn't he?
Will he need the crutches?
Yeah. And his conspiracy theory coming out again. Go on. You've got the inside line on Paul Pogba. Is he going to have the red dye in his hair again?
Well, he had red dye already this year. I think last game he played, he had red dye in his hair. So unless he changed it, which he's likely to do. He changes it every couple of days, so
right.
It's hard to know.
Phil, the hat might catch people out, as Phil has pointed out. Another What Odds Paddy is Roy Keane is going to be on punditry this weekend for Liverpool against Manchester United. And the phrases you need to keep an eye out for at odds of 7-4, and he has to say all of these for this to be a winning bet: character, work rate, and this is Man United we're talking about.
Guaranteed.
I'd say another one to throw in there is just don't have the players. Don't have the quality.
Yeah.
That'll be another one.
And something about medals, I reckon, will come out as well.
I don't know, because I don't think he can talk about any of them. Like, how many of the current team have medals? Ashley Young?
Yeah.
Premier League medals?
Yeah.
Yeah, just Ashley Young.
Ashley Young. Phil De Gea. Jones. De Gea.
The starting...
oh, the starting team for this week.
Well, okay. De Gea as well, yeah.
Yeah, well, I think they're decent odds, lads. Yeah. I think they're all stock phrases that are going to come out in Sky Sports 18 hours of coverage ahead of the game, which Roy Keane is probably going to feature.
Yeah, and any time he's in for United games, they tend to be the big ones, and United always play terrible.
Yeah.
So it's just, you're basically, the next morning, you're just looking back at, here's what Roy Keane said on this, here's what Roy Keane said on that. So, yeah, that's...
That might be worth a few quid of your money.
Somebody on that panel will guarantee you blame Pogba for the loss, regardless of whether...
in fact, he's playing.
Yeah.
And the other one is, no Manchester United player to pick up an injury during the game. Now, that's 4-1 on. Got plenty of injured players already. They can do it at another one.
Wouldn't surprise me. I don't know. Martial, is he fully fit coming back?
I don't think Martial will start.
No, I think he'll be on the bench.
Yeah.
Rashford, maybe? Rashford looks like... and this is actually something Sam Allardyce said a few years ago. I know, to be quoting Big Sam, like, you know, this, we're going to a different level here, but he did say that Marcus Rashford could be absolutely burnt out by the time he's 27, 28.
Okay, just because of the amount of football he's played.
The amount of football he's played. And
the reliance on him as well.
Yeah, he's starting to pick up the odd muscle injury, and that also goes down to the style of play that United were very passive at times and would defend deep under Mourinho, whereas Solskjaer wants more pressing, and that's all well and good, but physically it's very hard to transition from one style to another in the space of a few months.
Yeah, mentally as well, it must be tough on him because he's 21. People are forgetting that he's still 21. That's still very young to be the main man at Manchester United, expected to carry the team. And he's been expected to do that since Martial's been out injured, since Pogba's been out injured. And even last year, a lot of the time coming off the bench for Mourinho, he was expected to.
I think as well, Andy, when it comes to this, you know, Solskjaer's talking with the transition period for United. Quite simply, there has to be a season or so afforded to Marcus Rashford to play at number nine, because he's been shunted around an awful lot in terms of position up until now. OK, maybe he's not quite there in terms of his finishing, but the striker instincts are there. You're thinking, yeah, Lukaku is gone. You got to back Rashford, even if he has an indifferent season, to get the game time up front.
Well, Dan Taylor had a piece in The Athletic during the weekend, a big long piece about all the goings on within United at the minute. And in it, he said that United are looking at four transfers in the January transfer market, and one of them is a striker, and it's looking more and more like it's going to be Mandzukic,
which to me seems regressive. Surely
it's a short term. I don't think Rashford's going to, his long term position is not going to be down the middle. I think Rashford will watch Liverpool at the weekend, will play 4-3-3, Mane will play on the left. That's where I think Rashford would thrive in a system like that. And you know, even if you threw him into that Liverpool team, I'm not saying he's better than Mane, but he'd be a hell of a lot a better player if he was playing in that Liverpool team in a 4-3-3.
It worked a lot better when Martial wasn't injured and they were sort of changing between who was playing left and who was playing in the middle. And Martial plays pretty well in the middle as well. I would have Martial more as a number nine than Rashford. Mm-hmm. So we might see a system of that sort this weekend if Martial does come on, that the two of them are the main men up front, and then Dan James is kind of pulling off to the right a bit.
Your predictions as to what's going to happen then, Phil, this Sunday?
I'm leaning towards 2-1 to Liverpool, but I don't think it's going to be a classic, and maybe Liverpool score in the first half and go 2-0 up and United get a goal back and set it up, but they don't really look like getting an equaliser.
I think we've all been burned by Liverpool United games in recent seasons where there's a whole week of build-up, and in this case, I guess the international break has slowed that down a little bit, but we all kind of go, oh, this is going to be a cracker between United and Liverpool. 0-0 at Anfield. We've had a couple
of... Red Monday? I went to it.
Oh, God.
Oh, no.
It was the first
one
Mourinho
of the worst games you'll ever see.
Oh, it was terrible. Absolutely terrible.
But we've had this build-up sometimes, and we don't quite get the game. And I know out in the office at the moment, and I'm sure if people check out offtheball.com or check out Off The Ball on Twitter in a little bit, I'm sure all of our predictions are going to be exposed, to be laughed at and to be criticised. But a lot of people are going for quite a few goals this weekend. Might necessarily happen.
Yeah, like the Ireland fans, it's the hope that kills you for Man United. I think it's going to be a trouncing for Liverpool.
A trouncing in Liverpool's favour?
Yeah, in Liverpool's favour. Okay. They're going to... expose this United defence. They're going to be far quicker, far fitter. And I thought, watching Liverpool this year, just the standard of football they're playing is incredible. And compared to United, who are passive, they're not moving the ball quick enough, they are going to get overrun in midfield. And I'm going to go with a high-scoring game for Liverpool.
I don't oppose you in terms of the way Liverpool are playing at the moment, but Phil, I'll oppose Enda from the point of view, this has been an international couple of weeks away, really.
Yeah.
And the teams haven't had a huge amount of time to get back together, to maybe prepare everything ahead of this weekend. And sometimes teams just, you know, they look a little bit stale on the back of an international
break. And Liverpool, I know it seems strange to say it, they've won their first 8 games, but they haven't been free-flowing. They did this last season as well at the start. They were grinding out wins, and they won't care how they do it. I just think as well, I know you mentioned the difference in quality, but what can happen sometimes is United will be quite happy to drag Liverpool into the gutter and have us like slog it out with them.
But I don't even know if they have the players to do that anymore. Last year, they had Matic playing defensive midfield. He's not afraid to give away cynical fouls.
Yeah.
They don't have players to do that. Pereira starting midfield, is he going to do that? I don't think he is. They had Herrera but last year they had different players because they had Herrera, they had Matic, they had players who play like that, who are willing to make it a scrappy game. I don't think they have that this year. I think they're really almost afraid against teams.
If they
like
just sit deep and basically say to Liverpool, come and break us down, you know, every stray pass that Liverpool make, and they do give the ball away sometimes cheaply when you think if they were just a bit more patient, they try and go sometimes for the killer ball a bit too soon. But every time, you know, if a ball goes out for a throw-in or a goal kick or a shot goes over, it just builds the confidence of United. So that's why I think if they can get through the first 20 minutes intact, then they can grow into it. If they get to half-time and they're level, then they've got a chance not only of getting the draw, but I actually think maybe of winning the game, which sounds bizarre. But United have won two games this season, both at home and both against two teams that have been mentioned as top four contenders, Chelsea and Leicester.
Mm.
So it's not beyond the possibilities that United could actually beat Liverpool. Now, I don't think many people are going to predict it, but if we're sitting here on Monday morning and the United have won, it won't surprise me at all. Liverpool did this to United in the 90s, the odd time where they turned them over at Anfield, even though United were a better team.
Well, look, the lads are both going for Liverpool by varying scorelines this weekend, but both expecting them to win and continue that winning run. They're, of course, top of the Premier League at the moment, which puts a bit of pressure back onto Man City, because they don't want a situation where if they slip up, this league could go into double digits this weekend. Man City have to win, Phil. They're away, though, to a Crystal Palace team who've been in good form. They're just outside the top four at the moment, and they've turned City over a few times recently, including that big win at the Etihad last year. Yeah.
If Palace win this weekend, they go ahead of City. And, you know, speaking of predictions, Roy Hodgson, I predicted Roy Hodgson was going to win the sack race. Now, there was an asterisk beside it because I still wasn't sure if Wilfred Zaha was going to be sold. Obviously, he wasn't. But what they're doing is they're not conceding goals, Palace. And in fairness, Gary Cahill was tossed aside by Chelsea. Mm-hmm. Now he's in the Palace team. I know he won their, you know, the way the clubs do their Player of the Month. He just won their Player of the Month award. So even Jordan Ayew is doing well for them. So it's not an easy game for City. I still think they'll win. But it's just bizarre that here we are after they got 99 points last season, or 98 points last season, City. They lost four games. They just lose the strangest games. Like losing to Norwich and Wolves.
Wolves at home to me seemed an absolute
Wolves away I could almost deal with. But losing to Wolves at the Etihad without scoring, losing to Norwich, and, you know, by the looks of it, City are going to lose more games this season. But I still, if you were to ask me right now who's going to win the league, I'd still favour City ahead of Liverpool.
And what do you think about this one? I mean, City obviously have got an opportunity here where if they win, they put a little pressure, bit of pressure back onto Liverpool. If they lose, Liverpool, not that they can relax going into the game against United, but they know they still have a significant lead even if they were to lose.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be a tight one. Crystal Palace were very good against West Ham in the last fixture before the international break. They played a five midfield, and I think it's going to come down to the system Crystal Palace play. They're likely to play that five again and pack the midfield as much as they can. Wilfred Zaha was playing on the right. And if João Cancelo starts at left back again for City, that's somewhere where they can be got at. I know we were speaking of him as if he was probably going to come in and be the best fullback in the league instantly, but he was actually quite poor against Wolves, and Traore had a lot of fun against him. So if they play Zaha at the right, it could be a similar situation where Zaha goes at him. But I would expect probably Zinchenko to come back into the left-back position for City just based on Pep Guardiola's ruthlessness.
We'll race around some of the other games then. I'll give you first shout on this one, Enda. Everton against West Ham. Everton under huge pressure at the moment. They've been playing really poorly in recent weeks. Seamus Coleman suspended this weekend as well. And they've lost two of their last three against West Ham. Bit of pressure on Everton going into this one.
Yeah, and I can see them being under even more pressure after this week, because I can see West Ham nicking a result here, and it's, I suppose it's probably unfair to even say nicking a result, because West Ham are a good side. They weren't poor against Crystal Palace, but they're caught in the break quite a bit. So unless Everton can expose them that way, I can't see them exposing them any other way, because Everton have been really, really poor this year.
What do you reckon, Phil? The pressure on in Everton?
Yeah, I think if Everton lose tomorrow, I think that's it. I think Marco Silva's gone. Four defeats in a row in the league. Got a bit of breathing room when they beat Sheffield Wednesday in the League Cup, but Seamus Coleman is out as well. It's the midfield. You just have to look at Idrissa Gueye went to PSG. So when he didn't play last season, there were six league games he didn't start last season. Mm. Everton conceded 18 goals. So their central midfield at times this season has been Fabian Delph and Morgan Schneider, and they started together four times, lost all four games. That's the problem area for them. They concede goals from set pieces for fun now. So, you know, if you're West Ham, every time you get a corner,
Haller is quite good in the air as well. Yeah. So,
I don't think Marco Silva is going to last much longer anyway. I just think there's something not right there. It's, you know, he was under pressure from the start when they invested in the squad, but it just doesn't look like it's working. I don't know what they do. Who do they turn to wave the magic wand? But certainly, you wouldn't be surprised if they lost tomorrow and you were reading a statement later tomorrow evening that Marco Silva...
Alan Pardew is available.
Yeah,
he is. Mutual consent.
Phil, Newcastle got the shock results just before the break against Manchester United.
Positive
we weren't expecting. It still had to be with the way Newcastle were playing.
It was a relegation playoff. It was a 6-point.
Two-footed. But they've got a terrible record against Chelsea. They've only won once in the last 25 years away from home against Chelsea.
Oh, that was the Papi Cissé game,
yeah.
Was it?
Can Steve Bruce turn around this horrible recent run for them?
They've won one, or they've won six of their last 31 Premier League games away from home, Newcastle. Bizarrely, they beat Tottenham this season at White Hart Lane. So there's definitely a chance. Chelsea are banging in goals now, but they've only kept one clean sheet. So Newcastle can take a bit of hope from that they might score. But I think Chelsea will just have too much. They'll score too many. And yeah, I think it's one of those ones where Steve Bruce won't be expecting them to win. If they get a point, he'd be delighted.
We're in Fergie time now at the moment, Enda, so we'll get hot takes on the rest of the fixtures. You can have the shout then on Leicester against Burnley. And this is, you know, Leicester City, who are in a great run of form, in fourth place in the league at the moment against Burnley at home.
Yeah.
Home win?
This is one of those fixtures that Sean Dyche is going to love. He's going to love frustrating Brendan Rodgers' team. He's going to shut up shop. Chris Wood's going to be up top. He's going to be causing all sorts of problems for that Leicester defence from set pieces. But you just have to think that, you know, Leicester, they're coming strong this year. They probably will have too much at home. If this was actually in Burnley, I'd probably expect Burnley to go and nick a result. But Leicester would probably have too much for them this week, I would say.
Phil, Spurs badly need a win against Watford at home tomorrow.
Yeah, just 1 win in six games for Spurs in all competitions. I think this is actually the perfect game for them. Now, I thought that...
About Brighton away.
Brighton, and they got thumped 3-0. But no, I think Watford are hopeless at the moment, and this will actually suit Spurs. Bit like when they beat Palace comfortably. I know they beat Southampton as well. They did that with 10 men. I just think they'll get the job done. And doesn't mean that things are all right, because I know they go to Anfield next week, but... certainly this will take a little bit of the heat off Pochettino.
Speaking of Brighton, it's going to be interesting to see whether Aaron Connolly plays tomorrow, because if Graham Potter was talking about protecting him, maybe not absolutely flogging him. It is good management from a good manager so far.
Great management, yeah.
Aaron Connolly might not play at Villa Park tomorrow, but Aston Villa play Brighton.
Yeah, based on form, you'd start Aaron Connolly, but because he played quite a bit over the international break, you'd expect Graham Potter to maybe give him a break and maybe bring him off the bench. This is going to be an interesting one, because I don't expect Brighton to do what they did against Tottenham. Aston Villa are quite good defensively. I would say this is going to be a boring enough game, to be honest. The midfield, Aston Villa have too much for Brighton in the midfield, in my opinion, with Grealish and McGinn. Both of them have been brilliant since they've come up into the Premier League. So if anything, I'm going to go with a 1-1 draw on that.
Phil, Wolves against Southampton. Wolves on the back of that great result at the Etihad just before the break. Nuno Espirito Santo will be hoping that form carries on.
Yeah, but Wolves are strange, where they could easily lose to Southampton. And Southampton were a team I thought would really be pushing for top half, because I was impressed with what Hasenhüttl did when he came in. He has an idea of how he wants to play. Very similar to Jurgen Klopp. I know he doesn't like that comparison, but they haven't scored enough goals. And they're actually better away from home, so I wouldn't be surprised if they got a result. I think the game where there's going to be so many goals, Bournemouth and Norwich.
Yeah.
I'd be very surprised if there wasn't at least 4 goals in that game.
And Andy, you get the last game of the weekend. It's on Monday. Sheffield United at home to Arsenal. Horrible journey for the Arsenal supporters have to go to Sheffield on a Monday
beautiful,
night.
It's beautiful, isn't it? Yeah. Sheffield United at home on a Monday night, and it's probably going to rain.
It's old school. Kind of this...
as an early 90s feeling.
Bit of a throwback, Brian Deans up front for Sheffield United, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I probably would expect Arsenal to get a result here, though. They've been picking up form, they've moved up into third, they've got players coming back, and as critical as people have been of Arsenal, they have a lot of talent within that squad, and they probably have too much for Sheffield this weekend.
Okay, it's going to be an interesting weekend of fixtures. If you're looking to hear the action from Old Trafford on Sunday, Dancing on Ice star Kevin Kilbane is going to be on commentary with Nathan Murphy for that one. 4:30 here on Off the Ball if you want to listen to Manchester United against Liverpool. Some interesting games across the weekend as well. Thanks a million for joining us for our Paddy Power Half Hour. We'll talk to you again next Friday.
The Paddy Power Half Hour on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power, the greatest football partnership since Jeff and Heskey.